Hello, this is Jeff Wine with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Key Realty in Port Huron. I would like to go to work for you. Contact me at 810-650-6255 or email me at jeff@porthuronhomes.com.
All right, on this Tuesday morning, I think we all know that healthcare is a difficult field, and especially when it comes to emergency healthcare. EMS workers work hard in difficult conditions, and that's all illustrated in a new book, and it's kind of a journey to where this came from. We talked about three and a half years ago with Derek Hanley. He is a paramedic photographer, and he put out a book called Photos from the Front Lines. That led to a film, which led to another book that really illustrates how difficult EMS work is. He's on the line with us right now. Derek, good morning.
Paul, thank you so much for having me again. It's great to speak with you, and I've been looking forward to this conversation.
Well, me too, and I appreciate you joining us. Did I get that chronology basically right? Photos from the Front Lines was the first in this series, right?
Correct, yeah. I embedded with paramedic crews in the San Francisco Bay Area during the first year of the pandemic, captured some amazing photography and imagery of the heroism and bravery that these folks were showing, showing up day after day in, you know, what was one of the worst public health crises in a generation. And by the end of that year, I had enough material that I was able to put it together into a book and create almost an archive of what the pandemic looked like through the prism of the paramedics who were showing up every day to help those who were in need. And that led to quite a number of things once it was published. Obviously, you know, we spoke when it first came out. It was a great conversation, and it inspired a lot of different things that happened throughout the country. But then, funny enough, I believe LinkedIn it was, connected with this CBS news producer. And she was mentioning how she was working on a film that was about EMS. And, you know, ordinarily, Paul, I probably wouldn't have thought much about it, but she mentioned how three of her children were EMS providers in the New York area. And I'm sure you remember early in the pandemic, the New York area got hammered, and those medics were just run ragged. And so when she explained a little bit about the film and was talking about it, and she mentioned she'd seen some of my photos out there and wanted to get them in the film, and then now that that's kind of the second evolution of where the photos have been able to inspire folks and tell the story of these folks who are out there on the front lines.
Well, this goes well beyond COVID. Obviously, that was a big stressor at the time. But, I mean, conditions are always difficult, to say the least, right?
100%. And, you know, the pandemic really stressed the system and exposed a lot of the issues that were already kind of brewing. But I think it actually accelerated some of the problems. And I'll explain it to you kind of like this, Paul, you know. As you mentioned, this is a very stressful job, and I put kind of air quotes around routine trauma that paramedics have to see, you know, car accidents, injured children, cardiac arrests, things like that, which is ordinarily, you know, extremely difficult to have to deal with. In fact, you know, most paramedics see more trauma throughout their career than most soldiers do. And so this, you know, it was very hard for these folks, you know, not only because of the routine trauma, because of the kind of ever-ballooning weight of uncertainty of, is this virus going to make me sick? Is it going to make my family sick? You know, this and that. So I could see as it was happening, folks being kind of burnt out, because this is, you know, we're talking months and months and months and months. These folks had to be, you know, kind of on their hind legs fighting. And it's easy to understand how someone could look at this and say, why do I keep doing this? Why am I showing up anymore? Like, this is so dangerous. This is so stressful. Why don't I do something else behind a computer, or, you know, work from home or whatever? So, you know, people were starting to leave the field, and then, you know, this accelerated, because now if you're having less people within, you know, the EMS agency, that means the folks who are there are going to have to work even harder, and they're having mandatory overtime, and then that's making them burn out even faster. So you can kind of see this this negative spiral happening. And, you know, it can get to the point where there's a condition that emergency dispatchers call level zero, which means there's no ambulances available to respond if you're having an emergency. And that's a frightening prospect. And, you know, there's ambulance deserts. There's all sorts of things we can talk about relating to this. But I think one of the big takeaways is that the EMS system is really in a severe amount of strain. And, you know, in the film, they call EMS in crisis. And I think we're kind of approaching that point of, you know, if we don't start as a society really valuing EMS and the medics who are out there when we need them most, we may call for them and they may not be able to show up.
That's worrisome at the very least. Talk a little bit more about ambulance deserts and the kind of crisis that EMS workers are facing right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in most major cities, ambulance coverage is pretty good because the funding and everything is there from the tax base. That's not necessarily a guarantee. There's even cases of, I remember a story, maybe it was in San Antonio or something like that, where, you know, firefighters showed up for someone having a pretty critical emergency, but there are no ambulances available to transport the patient. So the firefighters actually commandeered a city bus to transport the patient to the hospital to get him there to be able to be treated by the doctors and whatnot. And that's in a major city. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're talking about some of the more rural areas that are out there in the world, you know, a lot of these areas are covered by volunteer agencies who have, you know, shaky funding at best. And a lot of these folks, especially since the Big Beautiful Bill came out and changed the kind of funding for a lot of ambulances and how calls are reimbursed, it's made it even harder for some of these small mom-and-pop or volunteer ambulance corps to be able to stay in operation. And a lot of them are closing, which is then forcing surrounding agencies to have to respond should there be a critical emergency that needs coverage. And that could mean, you know, you could call for an ambulance and it may be an hour before they even show up to start rendering care. And another thing, too, that's interesting, Paul, is this isn't just, this issue is, you know, we're highlighting it because of the film and mm-hmm. because of the book and, you know, EMS and this and that, but this is not isolated to this particular segment. You know, you call, if you haven't called 911 lately, you're ended up waiting on hold for 5 to 10 minutes sometimes because there's a dispatcher shortage. So this is kind of, like I said, we're trying to sound the alarm with the film and the book that folks should be paying attention to what's happening in their local area, because believe it or not, Paul, EMS is not considered an essential service in most states. And with that being the case, it means they don't have the same funding that police and fire do. And along with that, they also don't have the same pay that police and fire do. You know, you look at an emergency scene or you drive by an accident, you see police, fire, and EMS there showing up. Most people don't know that the ambulance medics make far less than police and fire, and they don't have, you know, the city pension plan and the benefits and things like that that, you know, someone who works in those other agencies may. So it's, you know, ambulance deserts is particularly, you know, worrisome, especially if you're, you know, traveling to the country or you're out camping or you're in, you know, you may feel safe at home, but if you're out in some of these more rural areas and you have a time-dependent injury or illness, that can be a serious problem if you can't get an ambulance there to help you out.
Well, and Derek, I feel like this is something most of us don't realize. We don't know because we don't, you know, if we're lucky enough not to have had to dial 911 at any point and haven't had to experience this, we just kind of go through life assuming that, well, if and when that time comes, if I'm in an accident, if I have a heart attack, I can dial 911, somebody will show up right away. That's, as you pointed out, not always the case.
Not always the case. And that's actually one of the reasons that I continue to, you know, I created the book, Photos from the Film, and continue to talk to folks like yourself, and I appreciate the platform to air some of these things because, yeah, I mean, most people assume you call 911, the ambulance is going to show up in a few minutes and bring you to the hospital. And I, you know, as a kind of a thought experiment, I imagine, you know, myself and my wife being out camping or something like that and her having some sort of emergency. And, you know, if I called for an ambulance and it wasn't able to show up, I would just lose my mind. I don't know how I could handle something like that. It's just horrific. I mean, you can imagine, you know, someone's kid drowning and, you know, doing CPR and needing an ambulance to come and it can't show up. I mean, you can extrapolate out all the different types of emergencies that are out there and how horrific it would be, especially if this is happening to someone that you love. And that's the scariest part. And that's what really has continued to drive me into wanting to continue to get the word out about these things. Because, yeah, you're right. Most people assume that the system's going to work. And the scary part would be when folks realize it's not working, when they actually need that ambulance and they call and it can't show up. So that's why it's good to raise awareness of this particular issue, because I think if folks understand that maybe AMS, is EMS, maybe even asking the question of, is EMS essential in my area? How is EMS funded? Are they fully staffed? Are they able to respond? Should my child need it? You know, these are kind of some of the questions that I'm hoping conversations like this provoke in people's minds.
Absolutely. What's the solution? I mean, if you could fix the system, with a plan, what plan would you put into place?
I've heard several models proposed. I think, you know, one of the easiest situational fixes is probably making, you know, like I said, making EMS essential across the country. Because once you have that essential services designation, it makes it a lot easier for funding to flow into the coffers that need to take care of these issues. Another issue that most people don't realize when it comes to ambulance is it's a very outdated funding model. Because for the most part, you know, paramedic is actually a relatively new profession, Paul. It's only in the 70s that paramedics really started being trained, and, you know, ambulances were more than just, you know, funeral director hearses, which is how it originally started, bringing folks to the hospital. So when someone, you know, calls 911, and let's say they don't elect to go to the hospital, maybe they're stable enough and they say, yeah, you know what, I don't need an ambulance. The ambulance doesn't get reimbursed for all that that they had to do to go out and take care of these folks. They're only reimbursed for the mileage that they transport the folks. So, like I said, the funding model is not ideal, and it's causing a lot of these issues. Now, we can go even, you know, if we wanted to really go pie in the sky, I would like to see EMS maybe even be federalized or nationalized, kind of like they do in the UK, where, you know, every medic across the country is trained to the same standard. They all wear the same uniform. They can, you know, move laterally throughout the area, and they have interconnected computer systems, so that way, you know, medical records and things like that are shared across the whole system. And that way, you know, every medic across every state is getting paid the same. You know, everything is kind of cohesive. Now, that's, again, extremely difficult to actualize, but that's couple of ways that I've heard. But I think, you know, like I'm saying, Paul, the main issue is money with these folks. You know, if you have the money, then you can, you know, do the recruitment, the retention, the hiring, the wellness programs. That's another thing that's kind of missing in a lot of these public safety agencies is wellness. Because, you know, you have to, I should say, a lot of the mental health support for medical professionals is reactive in nature, meaning, you know, someone, you know, works and works and works, they get burnt out, and then now they have to kind of try and pick up the pieces after they've kind of fallen apart. And a better model is actually proactive mental health support, whereby maybe we have counselors available in the station to be able to debrief when calls come back, because, you know, you carry a lot of this stuff home, and that's a lot of the problem too is you know, you go and you do all these, you know, 12 hours of trauma and rough calls and CPR and, you know, like I'm saying, injured or dead children or this and that, and then you have to go home and be like, hey, daddy's home, or whatever the case may be, and kind of have to, you know, have this invisible way, I call it the backpack. You kind of have your backpack still on, you know, when you get home. So if you had a counselor at the station, you could debrief, get some of that stuff off your chest, and go home with a little bit lighter backpack. There's also, you know, critical incidents. So if something, you know, major happens, you can have someone available to be able to talk to crews, or someone available at the station they can check in with. You know, there's many things that could be done to promote the longevity and the well-being of these folks, which really isn't in a lot of areas. And that's starting to change somewhat. And, you know, that's a good thing. But I don't know if it may be a little bit too little too late, you know. Yeah.
The new book, Photos from the Film, Honorable But Broken, EMS in Crisis. How can people connect with you, with the books, with the film? Do you have a website or somewhere where people can get more information?
Certainly. You can go to my website, dohp.net, dohp.net. If you want to learn more about the film, it's honorablebutbroken.org, honorablebutbroken.org. You can see the trailer from the film. You can meet the crew who worked on it, myself. Film was actually narrated by superstar Sarah Jessica Parker, which helped to kind of catapult it into the national lens, which has been great. And the film is actually available to watch on Amazon and Tubi, and we have links on the website as well.
All right, we'll check it out. Derek, good stuff. Appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much.
Paul, thank you, buddy. Great talk to you, man. Have a
good
day.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. The new 105.5 WPHM, that is Derek Hanley. He's a crusader, really, for sounding the alarm about the crisis that EMS is facing. I should just, as a side note, as most of you know, and we've talked about this on the show before, locally here in St. Clair County, there is an EMS millage that was introduced for the first time 4 years ago. It's up for renewal in August, and it really addresses a lot of those issues that Derek was talking about when it comes to funding, an outdated funding model, and that was kind of what happened here in St. Clair County, and that millage comes up for renewal next month. Let's check weather real quick.